Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron, and in the studio we've got Marie Harworth. Good morning, Marie.
Morning, Aaron. A te mārie whāngarā.
Marie's a local councillor therapist, and we talk every couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And we were talking with Robs about children, a different angle though. This time we want to talk about children. Marie wants to talk about children as well. She's read an article that, well, I'll give you the headline and you'll get it. Children found eating food scraps out of rubbish bag in Kaitaia. And a lady, a resident. It's the kind of scene you might expect to see in a third world country, writes the journalist, not in the streets of modern day New Zealand. Mm. Well, I mean, when we first started changing the economic settings in this country in the 80s and 90s, people who knew what they were talking about said that this would be the inevitable result. And the gap between the rich and poor has certainly got bigger. And these are the people who are really poor. And not enough food in the house. Parents who are not able to do their job because they're so incredibly stressed out. The article does descend a little bit into parent bashing. But when you've got, if you go over time, more and more parents appear to be failing to be parents across the whole nation, you might have to consider that it's not just a personal moral failure. I think it's a moral failure of the country as a whole, but a lot of us are trying to distract our attention from any connection to that on our behalf and just blame the individual parents who are failing to look after their kids well. But yeah, these two kids who were not very old.
No.
Did it say how old they were, Marie?
5 and 3, I think.
Yeah. So, and this lady had got some food for her own kids and they gave it to these kids who devoured it. And then they called a welfare department, I think. We don't have anything called a welfare department, but they called that an agency of some kind.
Yes, they did, yeah.
And Marie and I were just talking that there's always the fear that the kids are going to be separated from the parents, and some people might say, well, if the parents aren't doing their job, that's what you need. But then we hear stories about the foster homes that aren't very good either, and ultimately separating a child from their mother brings so many problems in itself that there's got to be a better way.
Yeah, I mean, research shows that children, regardless of what we might think, children are better around their natural parents, brought up around their natural parents.
Yeah.
Long term. however, obviously, a lot of those situations are extremely stressful. And then of course, we've got children who are growing up with trauma.
Now this has been going on so long, like since the 80s and 90s this started, now that there's parents who grew up like that, who are becoming, they grew up with trauma caused by economic deprivation, and now they're having kids. And and the right-wing politicians will bang on about, the ones who do this, bang on about responsibility and bludgers and training their kids to be bludgers. But we voted for, I really want to say this, there's no difference between National and Labor or any of the governments we've had since 1984 when it comes to the economic settings of this country. And it's an economic settings that have been implemented all around the world in most of the Western countries. And they've all led to the same thing, which is this big divide between rich and poor. And we've all voted for it.
Mm.
Most of us have voted for this, maybe probably unwittingly.
Yeah.
But we voted for it, and I don't know when we'll stop voting for it.
Well, I guess when we put all our eggs in one basket, we can only rely on that basket, can't we? If we've decided that the government decides and chooses everything for us and how we do this, how we look after each other, we take our hands off the responsibility. And in many ways we do look to the government always to lead and direct how we do things, and then we blame them also when things aren't going well because we see them as the top of the pyramid. We've given them a lot of power.
And ultimately change doesn't come from the government anyway. Mm. It comes from people who finally had enough and they forced the government to change.
Yeah.
I heard a great quote, if the people will lead, the leaders will follow.
Wow, that's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, so while I want to be...
I like that.
I feel the need to be clear that we've created a lot of these situations in this country because of the large-scale national settings. Mm. There are certainly individual families and people who have failed as well, but when it's this widespread,
And even you know, failure, where does it come from? Not having enough knowledge, not having enough resource, not having enough ability to step out of where you've come from and move into a different lifestyle. You know, are we set up for failure? Is our system setting us up? Many of us are up for failure. People that are intelligent people, people that can give a lot to society, and are part of our society, you know.
So I can be more specific about setting up for failure. Like, it has been determined that about an unemployment rate of about 5% is optimum for keeping wages down. So right. At any one time, you have to have about 5% unemployed so that those people are there and no one wants to end up where they are.
Mm.
And every now and again there'll be an article in the business section of the paper talking about they're concerned about labour market flexibility, right? And that's the code for keeping people desperate that they'll accept any working conditions. So, yeah, literally,
it's awkward, isn't it?
Yeah, it's literally set up. We are set up to have five, and they even have this awful phrase called a natural level of unemployment, which is bollocks. It's a contrived situation. There's no such thing as a natural level of unemployment. But that's what we do to keep wages down, to help the people at the top end get profits, and it means sacrificing 5% of the population into this situation, into this life where their 5 and 3 year old kids are combing through rubbish bags looking for scraps to eat. You know, and just because I'm blaming the economic settings and the government, and it's not just the government, doesn't mean that we can't do something in our own communities about it, which
absolutely.
I know is what you're feeling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's where Marie always goes. Yeah.
I'm biting it. Thinging. I don't even know what that saying is when you're chewing at the bit or
chomping
something.
Chomping at the bits. Yes. So we have an excited horse in the studio wants to run.
Well, straight away I go to what you just said about leaders. Say that again.
If the people will lead, the leaders will follow. Yeah.
I really like that. And I guess, you know, the time that we as communities decide that we can lead communities ourselves, that we can go over and above situations and provide food for communities, it takes a selfless act, you know. We're not built like that. We want something in return. If we're going to give something out, we want something in return.
I don't know, I think we might be built like that, but we learn that you get something in return. That's what our culture teaches us. Little kids,
well,
you often
almost,
see little kids
almost,
giving things
yeah,
away
it, you, yeah it's a trait in us, you know. You don't give without getting.
That's certainly an evidence.
That is actually a principle in life. You know, we can't just take things. We need to have a boundary there. We need to have, you know, what's right and what's wrong, and respect and honour other people and value their own properties and what they own. You know, we can't go and take fruit off other people's trees just because it's laden of fruit. You know, there's boundaries there. However, to think as a community over and above our own separate little properties, how can we support people in our community that, you know, are less fortunate than we are? And sometimes we can think we're very, we are less fortunate. But then if we look at what we've got, actually we're very rich compared to some people. And that can be a tricky one to get into because, you know, we always land on somebody's worse than us. But I'm talking about our own communities in New Zealand. What can we do? And there are people, obviously, in our community doing things. You know, we have groups that are trying to feed and support those less fortunate. I think of the food bank we've got, and I know Jono does his food night on a Monday where it's koha for the food that he gives out from the little tiny shop.
Jono
Hudson, is it? Yep.
Okay. I'm asking you. I don't know.
I think it's John O'Hudson.
Just down the bottom of Bow Street.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Little, I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, it's awesome food. No. Actually, I shouldn't have even said anything because it's too good. And it's like, I don't want you all down there taking it. So, yeah. Sorry about that, Jono. But yeah, I mean, great hearted person. And like I say, and the food bank is also, you know, always there, you know, for people to give food to and to support and supply, so that those who are coming into our community can get, you know, support that they need.
Mm. Yeah, so I just wanted to grab a stat just to put it into context. According to a recent report on child poverty, around 130,000 children were living in material hardship across Aotearoa, New Zealand. And obviously there's levels of that. Some are in dire straits and others less so. What do we do, Marie?
Well,
we do have the food bank. That's nice.
Yeah,
that's good.
I'd like to
and people can contribute to that.
Yep. And actually, I might just say that now. I think
When you go into Super Value, there's a sign up, or are there baskets by the
there's
checkout?
Baskets in both supermarkets, so I think.
Yeah, so you can, after you've bought your stuff, you can throw a couple of cans, non-perishables,
yeah, absolutely,
into a basket.
And if you're a gardener too, you know, you've got excess fruit, excess vegetables, certainly go and drop it off. It's going to go out. It's going to go to people. So they're also doing a Kai night on 28th of October down at the Town Hall Supper Room from 6 till 7.
Who's doing that?
That's the food bank.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just something that they've started doing. Yeah, I suppose if anyone wants to go and support that or that, you know, they're hungry, there's food down there on the 28th of October, 6 to 7.
They're going to make a little... Is that you're looking at a Facebook post?
No, I'm looking at a text.
Oh. Okay.
Well,
hopefully there'll be some.
I think it's more about
some
connections
publicity.
and communicating with people and maybe bringing out people that do have those needs. And it's really hard to ask for stuff. It's not easy to say you have a need. And with what's happened in our society at the moment, where you know you had the low income people were on the breadline. I mean, they've dropped beyond the breadline now, and we have middle-income people who have dropped to the breadline.
And COVID has made it amplified what was already a pretty big problem.
So we're going to see more of our young people, especially in the lower economic communities, you know, where there's not a lot of money, not a lot of jobs. And it's, you know, as people find it harder and harder to find rentals to put their families into, they're going to look for the communities that, you know, are probably harder to live in because their rentals won't be so expensive. So you've got families moving out to places where it's really difficult to get what they need. But they have a house. So it's almost like you're giving with one hand and taking with the other. Do you want to live in a house or do you want to have food?
Yeah.
It's I imagine an ongoing battle for many people. If I look at Raglan now to what it used to be when I did the food bank years and years ago now, over a decade ago now, there were lots
possibly
of solo.
Possibly two.
Yeah. You know, there were a lot of solo parents here, and the housing was substandard, you know. There were lots of unwell children here with asthma and chest infections because of our bad housing. Now that's all shifted and changed, and we've got much less solo parents here, better housing.
Are you able to measure that? Because often the solo parents are a little bit invisible to the rest of the town.
Well, I think the way to measure it is the people that work with them. You know, because we're the ones that are seeing it.
Yeah.
And so if I, so Marion at the food bank might know more about that than I would these days, but depending on my client group and who's coming through, you know, and your connections in community. If you're connected to your community, you will know these families that are perhaps less fortunate at the moment and may need support and help. And that's really difficult for somebody who's been managing for most of their life, you know, managing to pay the bills, managing to put food on the table. Now that's dropped to where they're not managing. Psychologically, has a huge impact on a family, you know, the feeling that, you know, I can't provide or I have to work harder, and the stresses are very real, and they're living with them every day. And if you're dropping below the breadline, that's, you know...
There's something I want to pick up on, because I know that some people will want to hear an answer to it, that you talked about there's not a lot of jobs, but right now there are jobs. I see jobs in the cafe windows especially. They're always looking for staff. But I don't think it's just as straightforward that there's jobs there and there's people who need jobs and they can just go get them. What's it like when you're under extreme stress to go... let's go to your experience again, Marie, like we always end up doing. So, because you talked about when your first child had just been born and you're a solo mum and you were really anxious, you had a lot of anxiety about going out in public and things like that. And obviously with a newborn, you're not really going to go out looking for some full-time work or anything.
No.
But just the what's it like when you feel like you know, there's societal pressure that you should be out getting a job.
I think it's really difficult. But then
you've got to approach people when you're feeling anxious. Tell us about that.
You've got to battle through a lot. It's extremely stressful, and unless you've got the tenacity to push through, you're likely to withdraw because it's just too hard. I mean, often solo parents or single parents don't have the family support or limited family support, or maybe even limited family support of who's speaking into their life, who's supporting them, who's encouraging them, or maybe giving them some insight on how to find jobs. Or it's almost an impossible situation when you've got a couple of kiddies at home to be hassled to be going out to work. I find that offensive as, you know, knowing what that's like to have two little ones at home, it's impossible to keep your sanity and your mental health, your mind health at a good level when you are constantly having to parent 24/7 and do everything and fill some time in with some work, which your benefit is going to be affected by. And half the time it's really not really worth the added stress that is involved in trying to navigate work when you're a solo parent. Me personally, I believe it's healthy for parents to bring up their own children until they're at least five. I would love to, if I could see it in the perfect way, that we would have a parent home with our children until they're ready to go to school. So as they had that constant.
Yeah. I must admit, as far as I'm concerned, when I see someone getting down on silent mums, I just think, oh, you're a bully. It's because it's bullying, because silent mums, they're women, so they don't have the kind of... It's harder for them to fight for themselves.
There's dads now.
Yeah, but that's seen as a little more heroic if you're a solo dad. Like that's the reality of where we're at with this issue.
Yeah, I agree.
I just think it's bullying to trample on people who are really struggling in their lives. Yes. Like, I've got no time for people. If anyone wants to come and argue with me afterwards, I'm more than happy. I'll be here at the town hall.
I'll be here too.
Yep. We'll sort this one out.
We can have a debate about it.
But there's also I've read writing by people who've been homeless and the difficulty of trying to apply for a job when you're homeless and you haven't got access to showers and things or nice clothes or anything. How do you turn up for a job when you're in a job application when you're in that situation?
That's what I mean. It becomes an impossible situation for many people because what it looks like is you go further and further down the ladder. You're not going up the ladder, you're going down. It's a terrible analogy, but that's what it feels like. You're getting further and further out of society rather than being able to be included and part of it. And I guess for some people who get to that outer place, then they start to reevaluate their life. If they do have some family around them, and they'll be the ones that are heading for the hills pretty much and looking to hanker down and
what do you mean heading for the hills?
Heading for the hills, like looking for land, somewhere else to settle and try and provide for themselves, build their own shelters and build their own outhouses or whatever the things that they need.
Yeah, like I know we've got families in this community who've had to do that because of the rental situation.
Yeah, so your life now becomes about, it changes. So you're no longer involved in everything that, that society is doing. Now you're totally involved in what you have to do to build what you're building on the land so that your family can survive. And, you know, for many of us, that can be a fantastic experience.
If you've chosen it.
Yeah, if you've chosen
it. People who choose to do that get inspired. They're inspired to do it, but we're not really talking about that, are we?
No, and I remember myself at one time when I had my son and my daughter, and we lived on some land for a while and no transport, really on the breadline. And we would have to walk into town, so it was a whole day exercise because I was living in Rotorua then, and we have to walk into town to get your groceries or whatever. So it was a whole day doing that. So yeah, everything about your life changed, and how it was all about survival. Was that pleasant? No.
No, that's not.
I didn't enjoy it. You know, it how filled my time.
How old were the kids?
So Potama would have been, gosh, I don't know, maybe 3 and Jesse, 5, yeah. So, yeah, it was pretty massive. Like I say, your whole perspective changes on how you're doing life. It's just about survival. So today I've got to do this, and it's going to take me this amount of time to get to here and back, and then I've got to prepare dinner or whatever it is your routine is. Your whole life is around just making that happen. When you don't have transport, you don't have support, you know. What you do notice as you're walking into town is all the cars passing you, and they have no idea about your life. I think that can be the most loneliest feeling, is that people are living their life and nobody notices how difficult life can be for others who are just surviving in life.
Which side of town were you on?
I can't remember. I don't.
I'm just imagining the main road when you come in from Hamilton.
So the airport side.
Oh, the airport side around there. Oh, there's some quite flash places around there to walk past as well.
Well, this was a very long time ago now, so I don't even know Rotorua anymore, but...
I lived there when I was...
I could have rode 16, over, I
16, 17, yeah. I lived there at 16, 17, 18 in Lynmore, which is out that side on the airport side of town, and that's a very nice area. So, yeah, you have to go past all that as well.
I don't even know if I even noticed that. Probably more so I noticed the cars.
Even a nice walk. It's like walking down Tarapa Strait for those who don't know.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, so you're totally in view of everybody all the time. It's quite difficult for the person experiencing it. For everyone else, it's just a snippet in time and they're just passing you by. But for the person experiencing it, you feel that. You feel the impact of your life while everyone else is busy doing theirs, you know. This was a long time ago, but has it changed? I'm not sure it's changed at all.
Your life's changed, but are more people in that situation now than there were then. Yeah.
And, you know, this, you know, go back to your land and start producing on your own land and people talking like that, you know, that's all well and fine to say that, but it takes years to build something and to produce something of any benefit to a future generation.
Was that what, have people said that that's what people should do?
Well, yeah, I've heard that. You've got land, you've got Māori land or something, you should just go home to your land and start building on it. Well, that's great and fine if that's what you're wanting to do. But if it's not what you're wanting to do and you're having to do it, then that's huge. It's massive. You're having to readjust your whole life. Not because you want to, but because you have to.
And if you're moving away from your support network.
Yeah, well, and a lot of, and you say, like when you said before, you know, there's all these jobs, and I agree that there are jobs coming up.
But that's just as a result of COVID and all the backpackers being away. Like, that's a temporary thing, I think.
Or people who lost their jobs.
Yeah, from COVID. From mandates, yeah. So there's been a great unsettling
yeah.
The situation. So the, and it hasn't been like this for 40 years.
And I have heard of people having to relocate to different places in New Zealand because there's more work down there. And that's great and fine for those who have family support. But if you're having to traipse off somewhere and you've got no support, I mean, it takes a lot of effort to do that on your own.
Are you talking about wind sending people down?
Yeah.
Or
the suggestion being there.
Yeah.
More than anything.
Like, I've seen winds do that, and that, I just think that's bonkers. Like, I know someone who was offered, you know, it was in 2008 when the economy turned down and the building, you know, work in the building industry stopped. I remember a guy was like, wind said I could get a job in Cambridge. And I'm like, are you telling me that there's no one, Wince doesn't know of anyone closer than Raglan who could fill jobs in Cambridge? Like, there's just been an economic downturn. I'm sure there's unemployed people in Cambridge who could fill those jobs.
Absolutely.
There. But Wince's job has become a little bit to punish you as well.
Yeah. And well, the stress of moving like that, of having to move, we've got to stop and think about this for people. It's massive, and we wonder why people are acting out or they're doing really strange things or... Obviously, you know, anxiety and depression is all around us. People are unhappy. People are having to do things that they don't want to do to survive. So, you know, these are just the outworkings of what we're all having to live through at the moment. I still believe that we can condense this down to communities and each look at our own communities and how do we support our own community? What do we need to do?
So we've got a food bank here.
Got a food bank.
But have we got homeless people at the moment? I don't know.
Oh, it's not a question that for me either. You know.
I know we do. Like the community house has put USB charging ports on the outside of the building.
Oh, wow.
So that people can who don't live in a place with electricity.
That's brilliant.
Can
good on them.
Can charge their phones.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah, it's a simple thing. But that's just an indicator, right?
Mm.
Oh, we shouldn't have to be doing that in a society where there's balance and the wealth is well distributed.
Yeah, if our community house is doing that, then there's a suggestion. There's lots of people out there that are living in places that don't have power.
Yeah.
Because they don't do that for no reason.
No, exactly.
Just for a couple of people.
Yeah.
So I think that in the summer we do definitely get a lot more coming in to Raglan and they kind of camp in different places. Do I have an inkling that there are people here who are living in places that may be quite difficult to live in? Yeah, I do believe that that's definitely happening here. People have come back and are having to rebuild their lives, and that does not happen overnight. Yeah, it's going to take some time. So we're going to see the stresses of that from those families or all those individuals. I don't know. Time will tell in that, I guess, but I still believe, as a community, there must be some land out there somewhere that nobody has their digs on. Maybe the council owns it or something, where we can put in big gardens, you know, and maybe even have, dare I say, some animals. You better not say that, because then we have all sorts of problems. Well, who gets the meat, you know? My head gets into a state when I start to go down the rabbit hole of what people might say about how to support people, you know, because then we start to put our...
You're talking about prejudice.
Yeah, or going, well, you know, how come... I mean, if everyone's getting fed in your community, isn't that great? Isn't that an amazing thing? And if every community was doing that, wouldn't that take the pressure off so much if we had our own food sources? But, you know, then you've got the shops would scream out and, you know.
Well, they couldn't because these are people who aren't able to buy food. They haven't got any money.
Yeah.
So they're not customers of the existing shops.
Exactly. But you would you still have people who would have something to say about that. I think just our voice needs to be stronger and over and above those ones. And regardless of what people think, still do it. Still go ahead and produce food. Put fruit trees in. You know, if all we
so
did
there,
was
so
put
there
fruit
are,
trees and vines
there
in.
There are fruit trees around Raglan, especially over at Oran Park.
Yep, there is, and they started over there.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep the momentum going, I think. And sometimes if you're just, you know, only doing little bits of work, It almost needs to be a massive piece of work so that everyone can see it and we're all involved in it. A bit like Wainui Reserve, you know, if you look back on photos, there was nothing there. And yeah. Look at that place. It is stunning and beautiful, and we love it, you know, and we value it now, but it didn't happen overnight. And it took people going down there and doing the planting and setting it out and all of that. And look what we've got. It's awesome. So why wouldn't we want fruit trees everywhere and kiwi fruit vines and feijoa trees? Come on, you know? And really simple food that is very nourishing. And have some veggies as well. But, you know, your fruit trees are what's going to be long-lasting. It's going to keep going. For future generations. And
there's something about the values of our culture that makes it hard to sort those things out.
Well, it's very sad when, you know, I think of Fiji as full of vitamin C, full of, you know, so good for us, so easy to grow. Man, we could have beehives down there. You can have your own honey.
You know where there's food? I was talking to someone and people about dumpster diving the other day, and there's a lot of food gets thrown out by supermarkets. And there is an organisation in Hamilton and around the country, I can't remember the name, it has the word Kai in it, that collects out-of-date food and brings it. Before COVID, they were bringing it out to the community house.
Yeah, but there's restrictions on that too, Aaron. We're not allowed to give out past your due by date.
Well, some things you can, like if it's bread, it's just
a little bit
stale.
Yeah, but there's that, you know, I think common sense. But the law says there'll be something wrapped around that says...
I know, and that's what I'm saying. This is the values of our culture that get in the way of that. The only people who go dumpster diving are usually the alternative kids, sons and daughters of middle-class families, who it's like an ideology that's what you would do, and they're making use of food that's otherwise going to go to waste, that's been grown and packaged and cooked and
amazing,
transported,
hey?
And all that energy has gone into it, and then it ends up in a dumpster at the back of the supermarket. So it's great that someone's finding a way to make use of that, and maybe all the supermarkets can do is decide not to put a lock on their dumpsters like some do in the US, and put them in a place where it's accessible to people. So at least it could get used. That's about all you could do as a supermarket.
Well, that just made me feel very sad that even that, because it's made public that people do that, now they're going and locking them. Oh,
well, that's
my
the
gosh.
US, because the US is always, whatever problems we've got, you'll find them amplified in the US, it would seem.
Yeah, it's very sad.
I'm sorry, any Americans out there, probably I've just dissed the entire nation.
we love you, America.
But
oh, the look. Well,
it's not this. It's not that kind of show, Marie.
Sorry,
it's a thing. It's a thing, and which way do we want to go
thing,
with it?
Well, it's a thing in our country. You know, we can always look at stats overseas, but we've got enough stats in our own country.
Yeah,
child poverty is massive,
which is what we're talking about, folks. We're talking to Marie with our Let's Talk segment. We started off with a story about some kids aged five and two. Someone saw them in Kai Tai looking through rubbish bags for scraps to eat, and they gave them some of their food. But
that was the other thing.
That's just a moment in time where you can be helpful. It doesn't solve the underlying problem, obviously.
And even that, we're not even allowed to do that now. And I can understand why.
What aren't we allowed to do?
Give out food to strangers. Like, you know, kids are taught not to take food off us, off strangers, and so they should be. So we should always be cautious about where we're receiving things from. But
if you're starving, it's different.
That message in our kids is going to get messed up and compromised because of there is not enough food. And so, yes, people are going to want to give things, and kids are going to be going, well, I'm not allowed to take it. You know, it's so difficult.
They've asked Kelvin Davis about it, Minister for Children. He said, children roaming the streets of Kai Tai has been a long-standing problem dating back to before he was principal. As I said at the start, this is the neoliberal economic experiment starting with Roger Douglas in 1984. I sound like a broken record, but... It was economic settings that benefited the rich and not the poor, and that made people poorer. I consider that to be an accepted fact. I know a lot of people might want to argue with it, but that's just what was supposed to happen has happened. And they went. They didn't start out saying we want to see 5-year-old children looking for scraps in the rubbish. That wasn't the aim.
No.
The aim was to have more money filtered up to the top end. But this is an inevitable consequence. So we can point to those bigger structural issues, but we can't solve those on our radio show.
No.
Marie prefers to deal in the community.
Yep. Absolutely. And we've got to take some power back somewhere.
Yeah.
And by power, I mean just common sense. And communities are in all cities. All cities have their own communities. Yeah, Hamilton's got Dinsdale. It's got, name some more off. Norton.
Suburbs. Norton. Am I saying
that? But I see them as communities. These are communities. These are standalone communities that, yes, they are segregated into areas, but to me, I see that as a community. So, therefore, this is your catchment.
Yeah, and they do have, they have a community centre in, they're called the Western Community Centre, which is over in sort of Dinsdale, Norton area.
Mm.
Norton.
But if we went through and we did catchment areas, these are the different areas and the different communities we've got. And so, now how does this community support this catchment? You know, what is the, you know, every community has its thing, has what it can do. And I don't know what each community has. Some communities probably may resonate more with growing food than they do with providing clothing or blankets or furniture, you know. Maybe some communities can do all a wraparound completely, which would be amazing. You know, can provide food and clothing and shelter.
Well, we talked about, actually something we were talking about off the air before we started was the fear that for families in this situation that the welfare system's going to take their kids away from them.
Mm.
And so they try and keep away from any authority figures or authority or agencies or anything like that, which further isolates them. And you were saying that it's actually a lot more complicated to take kids away from families.
Mm.
And we also talked about how taking the child away from the mother never, there's all sorts of negative consequences of that. Mm. And you just used the phrase wraparound support, which is what those families need. What those children need to have their parents supported so the parents can look after them well. That's the picture that's missing. Instead of just dumping on the parents when we've got a problem that's growing nationwide, we know it's not just personal moral failure that's causing this. It's a national moral failure. But to get back to the individual child, their parents need to be supported so they can look after them.
Yeah. And so even our social work system, how social workers work, you know, even that to me has changed. We've got so many services out there that provide things, but they're disjointed. They're all over the place. So you can't get a wraparound service for a family without that family having to go out and be part, you know, go out to that service. It's not many services coming into them. Imagine if you had somebody coming into your space and going, well, look, you can put a garden out here. We've got the services to provide that. We've got the veggies to get you going. We're going to have a team in here and put it in. Imagine that. Or somebody coming in going, okay, so you've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. I can see, you know, you need winter clothing and shoes. We'll go back to our shop.
And a heater.
You know, we can go back and get, this is what we're good at doing. This is what we can provide. You know, some people might be dental care or health needs. So you've got a medical person who can go, okay, so I know we can get someone to pick you up on this time, this date. Getting people to go out to services is impossible. Doesn't matter how many buses we've got or Uber drivers. We need to be going into and wrapping around. Then you would say, and it needs to be long term. Then what would happen is that it would become very clear the people that in real need. And we need parenting courses, people who will go in, keeping yourself safe courses for children. I went in into homes and did that. It was a fantastic course on how to keep yourself safe, you know.
And a lot of people probably need counselling.
It's massive.
Very stressed.
Well, that too. You could, as part of that wraparound service, if we looked at it in community, it wouldn't be so overwhelming for us, because each community has those people that can provide those services. Everybody does, in some form or another.
Yeah, and you talk about the distance to those services.
Mm.
Like in Raglan, it's worse.
Yeah,
because a lot of those services are not here.
We really need those services here.
Yeah, challenging. Hey, it's probably time for us to move on.
It is.
Thank you for coming in, Marie.
You're welcome.
And can we leave people with a good thoughts? What do you got?
Oh, yeah, totally. I think Raglan's amazing. Because we are over the hill, we have got people with tenacity here. We do have people that think of community. And it would be amazing if we could just move another step, I think, and really create something of nourishing value for the future generations, especially in the area of food.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.